Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
And welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn. Coming up, German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier visits Angola.
Ein Blick hier in die Region zeigt,
just looking at what is happening here in the region shows that we need to continue to work together urgently and closely, the minister said. But why is the German government showing renewed interest in Africa?
It has a lot to do with what's going on in Europe as well. And a large part of that is, of course, the French requests to Germany to do more, particularly in Mali and the Central African Republic.
We'll also be hearing about Kenya's plans to confine refugees to camps in the wake of Sunday's attack on a church in Mombasa. Stay tuned.
Top story.
German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier wrapped up a three-nation tour of Africa on Wednesday with a visit to Angola, during which he held talks with President José Eduardo dos Santos. Steinmeier urged Angola to address the imbalance between rich and poor in the country. Critics of the Angolan government say 10 years after the end of a civil war, the country is still plagued by cronyism, political repression and rampant corruption. And, as Stephen Mpuku reports, civil society groups are unhappy with the way foreign investors are doing business in the country.
The visit by Germany's top envoy to Angola has generated reactions from some civil society organizations in the southwestern African country. They say they would like him to know about the realities on the ground in the oil-rich country. Claudio Silva, the collaborator in the website of Angolan youth protest movement called Central Angola 7311, thinks Angola is not a good example of good governance.
I would like to ask the German foreign minister whether he is familiar with the reality in Angola, which the state institutions don't talk about. There are investments missing in the country, in education and healthcare services. Angola lacks a global plan for the country and its capital, Luanda. There is no freedom of expression and the constitution isn't being respected. This is a reality that has been partially overshadowed by the economical growth in the country.
Spurred by oil, gas and diamond exports, Angola is one of the fastest growing economies in the world. It is Germany's third important trading partner on the continent after South Africa and Nigeria. The capital, Luanda itself, is witnessing a construction boom, but the country still lacks reliable public institutions. It also has weak laws that continue to undermine the successful implementation of critical reforms. Due to its vast mineral resources, the country has greatly benefited from direct foreign investment. However, some critics, such as Rafael Moraes from SOS Habitat, an Angolan NGO which fights for the human rights of displaced people, say not all foreign investment is good for the ordinary citizen. He called on German firms in Angola to consider the welfare of the people instead of only concentrating on making profits.
First of all, particularly big German companies that are investing in Angola should respect human rights, because some Angolan leaders or entrepreneurs maybe just care about reconstruction and their profits. They don't really care about people's rights. If there is a partnership with a German businessman, they have to take into account the rights of those who live in the affected areas or where the investments are going to take place.
There have been allegations of squandering of oil revenues through corruption and mismanagement, which government of President Eduardo dos Santos has denied. But people like Claudio Silva from Central Angola 7311 think that corruption is also perpetuated by big investors from abroad.
We talk a lot about corruption in Angola, but the state of corruption in the country is also influenced by those in Europe or North America, who are making corrupt deals with Angolan entities, allowing corruption to continue. This is not just an African problem, it is also a European problem. I would like to know what Mr. Steinmeier has to say about how we could really fight corruption, not only here, but also in the European Union.
As the German foreign minister winds up his African tour in Angola and prepares to fly back home, one thing is for sure, he will have a lot of thinking from his trip to Angola.
Stephen Mpuku, and as the German foreign minister returns to Berlin, his cabinet colleague, German development minister Gerd Müller, is embarking on a trip to South Sudan and Mali. This all comes as Germany is redefining its overall policy on Africa. So why this flurry of activity among German officials? I put that question to Judith Vorrat, associate with the International Security Unit at Germany's Institute for International and Security Affairs in Berlin.
It's quite interesting. Africa has gotten a lot of attention recently in Germany, more than it used to have. I do think the reasons are not only related to Africa itself. Of course, it is related to what happened in South Sudan and Central African Republic and Mali particularly. There is a growing awareness of peace and security issues, there are migration issues, etc. But it has a lot to do with what's going on in Europe as well. And large part of that is, of course, the French requests to Germany to do more, particularly in Mali and the Central African Republic, and also a general feeling that Germany needs to take more responsibility in foreign and security policy.
The German development minister, Gerd Müller, has been referring to, and I quote, dialogue on an equal footing between Germany and Africa. But the focus of the government's new Africa policy is education, health, food security and crisis prevention. In other words, traditional donor activities. Where is the equal footing there?
That's a really good question. I think it is a bit typical in the sense that when you read policy documents and official statements, there's always this talk of a level playing field, Africa and the EU or Europe acting on an equal footing. But in reality, the view, not only in Germany, but in Europe in general, I think of Africa is still as a continent where, you know, you have to deal with a lot of crisis and conflicts. A lot of negative issues, despite all the talk about economic chances and economic growth. And so I think in reality, the view on Africa has not changed a whole lot. And also I think even though quite a few people probably mean it when they talk about a level playing field, I think they're not always aware of the real interests of African elites and also civil society.
There are a number of countries in Africa which have scant regard for genuine multi-party democracy or human rights. How much emphasis is Germany placing on promoting the values that it cherishes?
Well, there's always this thin line between promoting values, and Germany does always make a strong point that those values matter a whole lot in cooperation with Africa and other world regions. But on the other hand, you know, there's also a strong perception in African countries that European and also American and other countries, the US and other countries, you know, meddle with internal affairs and, you know, engage in talks about democracy and human rights while also pursuing a double strategy. And in the end, it's all about economics and natural resources, etc. So there's this thin line. And of course, it's also there for Germany. But I do think that will remain a strong point in the new guidelines that the foreign ministry in Germany is currently working on together with other ministries.
Judith Vorrat, associate with Germany's Institute for International and Security Affairs in Berlin.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
To South Africa now and the trial of Oscar Pistorius. He is likely to take the stand and testify later this week, according to his defence lawyer, Brian Webber. The prosecution rested its case on Tuesday. Pistorius, a 27-year-old double amputee Olympian runner, admits shooting his girlfriend, Reva Steenkamp, in February of last year, but said he mistook her for an intruder. He denies a charge of murder. The court has been hearing details of his relationship with Steenkamp. Proceedings have been adjourned until Friday, as Tuzo Kamalo reports from Johannesburg.
After 15 days of testimonies that included Pistorius' neighbours, friends, former girlfriend, forensic experts and cell phone analysts, the state rested its case in the Pistorius trial on Tuesday. The last witness to testify was police cell phone expert Captain Francois Muller, who downloaded 1,709 messages exchanged between the two, stretching from a few weeks leading to the shooting.
Emails coming in, emails going out.
Or a website that was left open.
That's correct, my lady.
Browsing history. So it does not mean that it is human interaction at that moment.
That's correct. From this detailed billing records, one can't specify the human intervention there.
Although Muller admitted that 90% of the messages exchanged between the two depicted a couple in love, the remaining 10% painted a rocky relationship. On January 27, Steenkamp sent a message to Pistorius saying, "I am scared of you sometimes and how you'd snap at me and of how you'd react to me." Other messages reveal Pistorius as a jealous man who would often pick a fight with Steenkamp until she suggested that maybe they were not capable of pleasing each other. However, it is from Pistorius' neighbors who testified that they heard a woman screaming for help before the shooting that the state will likely base its case. Many South Africans following the case have expressed mixed emotions. Johannesburg youngster Figiso Tubeni says after the 15 days of testimonies, there is only one verdict she can think of.
All I think is Oster is a murderer. Obviously, he shot his fiance. He's guilty. And the poor girl is dead because of him.
But others insist that it's too early to judge since Pistorius' own version of events of that fateful day is yet to be tested in court. Legal expert Aldrich Rowe says the ball is now in the defense court, especially Pistorius himself, as both the accused and also a key witness.
So they will be relying on his honest and truthful testimony in order to prove that he acted in self-defense. It's going to be difficult, David. There's no doubt about it. And if he does not testify, a definite negative inference will be drawn and the state's version will be accepted. I have no doubt. He will have to testify.
Meanwhile, the defense has indicated that Pistorius is one of its witnesses who will take the stand. The trial that was initially scheduled to conclude by the 20th of March 2014 resumes on Friday and is now expected to end on May 16.
Tuzo Kamalo reporting.
Behind the headlines.
There have been protests in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo against a British oil exploration project in Virunga National Park. The demonstrators fear mountain gorillas' natural habitat will be polluted, a charge which the British company rejects. The protests coincided with the opening of a conference on natural resources management. Gaius Kawene was there for this week's Behind the Headlines.
No to oil exploration in Virunga National Park. Yes to the promotion of the tourism industry. Stop corporation abuse in our park. These are some of the messages on banners held by protesters in Goma, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, as they held a peaceful demonstration this week. The protest was against a conference attended by government officials and 37 foreign diplomats to discuss how best to utilize the country's vast mineral resources. Many civil society organizations are against the oil exploration project in Africa's oldest game reserve, the Virunga National Park. Josue Mukura is representing fishermen on Lake Albert, which is located in the park famous for its mountain gorillas. He explained to me why they were against the exploration project.
Fishermen, their wives and children are against this oil exploitation plan because it narrows their work. It violates Congolese law and international treaties. When oil exploitation pollutes the lake, there is decrease of fish that affects our social life. Moreover, apart from local communities, there are also many other people who depend on the lake.
And it didn't take long to find others who also depend on the lake. Several women depend on the land to sell agricultural products and fish in the city of Goma. They did not hide their anger.
I firmly refuse. I refuse because I know the consequences of oil exploration. Those who have fields around the lake will no longer produce crops as before.
I have not studied. All I know is selling fish. We do not need this oil exploration to live. All I want is to increase my fish selling revenue, to be able to send my children to school and provide my other needs.
British companies Soko International and the Congolese government have promised to protect nature and respect the environment while exploring oil in Virunga National Park. Dr. Gimba Ima, director of the Congolese Institute for Conservation, believes this is possible.
Conciliation harmonieuse entre d'une part l'exploration.
It's realistic to find a harmonious balance between this exploration, which can lead to oil exploitation, and the protection of biodiversity. It is only here, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where the WWF wants you to believe that it is impossible. It's the WWF that wants to prohibit economic activities here. And if we exploit oil without destroying the park, we'll have enough money to preserve not only the Virunga, but other parks as well.
But not all share Mbaima's view. Pascal Muko, the coordinator of Safe Environment for All, EST, a local NGO, says instead of oil exploration, DRC should focus on other sectors.
With the restoration of peace in our province, we can focus on tourism, sustainable fishing, hydroelectricity, and this can increase the government's revenue instead of oil exploitation endangering local communities.
In a press release, the head office of the UN mission in DRC, Martin Kobler, reiterated that natural resources should benefit everyone. Until that happens, such protests are likely to continue.
Gaius Kawene reporting from Goma.
Harare, Nairobi, or Abuja. Africa Link correspondents reporting for you from wherever the story breaks.
Kenya has said it is going to restrict all refugees on its soil to two designated camps in the wake of a weekend attack on a church near Mombasa that claimed six lives. Kenyans were asked to report to the police any refugees or illegal immigrants seen outside the overcrowded camps at Dadaab and Kakuma. I asked our Nairobi correspondent, James Shimanyula, if the restrictions were being enforced.
They have not been enforced yet. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, which deals with refugees, the majority of them Somalis, who live in camps in northeastern Kenya, Dadaab and Kakuma, is yet to receive the official word from the Kenya government that refugees have to go. And from there is when they can discuss ways of moving them. You can't move thousands of refugees overnight, Mark. That's what we are waiting for. In other words, the order has not been enforced.
Is there any evidence that the attack on the church was carried out by a refugee or an illegal immigrant?
So far, there is no official evidence pointing to the fact that refugees were indeed responsible for the attack at the church. But, you know, as well as I do, that we have had previous attacks in Mombasa, more than a dozen, over the past 1 year or so. And I've never heard of a refugee having been implicated, rather than gangsters or freelance gunmen.
Who do the authorities suspect was behind this attack?
Well, the authorities have not said exactly, because they say they have arrested more than, 50 suspects. We don't know if some of those suspects are actually refugees. We don't know to which country they come from, whether they were here illegally or they are part of the young people that are allegedly being radicalized at mosques in Mombasa. We don't know.
Confining refugees to camps is something that the Kenyan authorities have tried before. They did it in 2012 after bomb blasts in Nairobi's Eastleigh neighbourhood. Did it really boost security back then?
Good memory you have, Mark. The only thing I can tell you that the Kenya government, if I can borrow your words, did exactly that. They never succeeded. After a week, to the best of my knowledge, the refugees were flooding back to their areas in urban centers, and we went back to square one. And we may, I'm afraid to say, if we are not careful, we means the government is not careful, the same scenario may repeat itself. All I know is that if they are very serious, it would be better if they removed them from here, take them in another third country or outside the continent, maybe in Europe. Otherwise, taking them to the refugee camps will not solve the problem.
What do people in Kenya think? Do they believe the violence is getting out of hand, or do they think the government is getting to grips with it, albeit slowly?
People are worried. I am one of them that is worried. Every time I walk in town, I'm worried, because you never know who will attack you. So generally, Kenyans are worried because insecurity has become a problem. Every other day, we have attacks here and there. And in fact, just to remind you, when the Mombasa church was attacked, the government has announced through a county top official in Mombasa that once the police see a suspect, they shoot and kill. We are back to shoot and kill order that was there during the Mwai Kibaki days. So things are not good security-wise because they are still roaming around and you'll never see their faces written, criminals. No, they are not known.
James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
Opinion.
Now, we were hearing earlier in the programme about German foreign and development policy towards Africa.
When you read policy documents and official statements, there's always this talk of a level playing field, Africa and the EU or Europe acting on an equal footing. But in reality, the view, not only in Germany, but in Europe in general, I think of Africa is still as a continent where, you know, you have to deal with a lot of crisis and conflicts. And also, I think even though quite a few people probably mean it when they talk about a level playing field, I think they're not always aware of the real interests of African elites and also civil society.
Is Judith Horat right? What do you think of European policy on Africa? Do you think it should be changed? And if so, what should be changed? What should Germany do? Let us know your opinion in a text message to +491609575910, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
And we've almost come to the end of our programme, but before we go, a reminder of our main stories. German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier has wound up a three-nation tour of Africa in Angola with a call for closer bilateral cooperation. We've also been catching up on the Pistorius case and hearing about protests over a British oil exploration project in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Africa Link returns at the same time tomorrow. I do hope you will be able to join us then. Thank you, as always, for listening. Until the next time, this is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.